New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is not your ordinary deck of playing cards. These cards contain 52 unsolved cases, and with every hand that's played, the stakes are unusually high. They've been dealt to inmates across the nation, and investigators are hoping their tips will stack the odds in favor of the house. Now it's your turn. These victims have been dealt an unfair hand, and it's up to you to deal justice. Somebody, somewhere, has information that could be investigators' ace in the hole. Welcome to Season 3 of Dealing Justice. I'm Jennifer Dubasak.
And I'm Lori Jennings.
In today's episode, we learn about the life and mysterious death of 14-year-old Anthony Lamar Peterson. This episode, we were fortunate enough to connect with the St. Johns County Sheriff's Department. They were so incredibly helpful with getting us information and extremely dedicated to this case. This department and Sergeant Tolbert offered up so much of their time and their support, and we are grateful to them. But it was apparent their efforts were in honor of Anthony and his mom, LaTanya Passmore, and more importantly, to seeking justice and getting answers.
My name is Gene Tolbert. I'm a sergeant with the Sheriff's Office in St. Johns County, Florida, assigned to the cold case investigation of Anthony Lamar Peterson. Anthony was a 14-year-old who was found deceased in August of 2005 in the southwest area of St. Johns County. His case remained unsolved. This case is one of those cases where, you know, being secretive about it and not talking about it does not help. Time is not our friend in this case. Ms. Passmore and Anthony's family has gone long enough without answers. And really and truly, if this case is ever resolved, it's going to be through pulling on someone's heartstrings, hoping that someone has a change of conscience, and if they have some information, that they come forward.
As always, we would love to see the day when there are no faces to put on the cold case playing cards. But until that day comes, we will continue telling these stories in pursuit of dealing justice.
Help us deal justice for Anthony Lamar Peterson.
It's time for us to solve these cases one card at a time.
This is Season 3, Episode 1, The Anthony Peterson Case, Four of Hearts, Florida Deck. This episode of Dealing Justice brings us to the murky waters of Deep Creek, where deep, dark secrets continue to haunt the family and community to this day. Anthony's life began right here in Florida. In fact, he was born here in Orlando, Florida, where Lori and I are based out of and where we record this podcast. We came across Anthony's playing card in the Florida deck. His card does not show a picture of Anthony. Instead, it has a black silhouette of a nondescript male and white text across it that reads, "No photo available." And under this is Anthony's full name, Anthony Lamar Peterson. And beneath that, it reads 14-year-old black male. Now, when Lori and I are doing research and we come across a playing card with no picture, it always gives us pause. Why no picture? Now, we know the truth is that oftentimes it's simply clerical, but we find ourselves compelled to find a picture, to see their face and acknowledge their existence. A picture sticks with you. It tells you a lot about the person and offers context clues to what makes them real and makes them who they are. But without it, we're left to wonder, as we did with Anthony, who was he? Was he alone in life? Did he have anyone fighting for answers and advocating for him? Anthony was so young. We really hoped there was someone out there who loved him and who could and would tell us his life story. Who was Anthony and what happened in his short 14 years on this earth that led up to his death? And to our relief, Anthony was very loved and cared for, and there was someone, the perfect someone, to tell us his life story.
My name is LaTanya Passmore. I am the mother of Anthony Lamar Peterson Jr.
We asked LaTanya to help us get to know Anthony and to start from the very beginning. She takes us back to 1990 and tells us about her little boy who was affectionately nicknamed Amp.
Anthony was born in Orlando, Florida Hospital in 1990. Anthony was one of those cute little lump fat kids. At birth, he was 8 pounds, 13 ounces. Yes, he was lazy. He didn't want to walk. He always wanted you to pick him up, hold him, and he was a crybaby. Oh, he wore my back out because he was so heavy. And he was a sweet baby. Anthony has 3 sisters. I have a set of twins. And his younger sister, they're 3 years apart. They babied him a lot. You know, around 3 years old, we had like a little incident where one of my nieces ended up pushing him in the pool. He came around. It kind of damaged him a little bit. He had chronic asthma. He ended up with some learning disabilities. He was a good kid.
According to the CDC, the leading cause of death among children in Florida is drowning. And the long-term effects of a near drowning can have physical and psychological effects that stay with both the victim and their caregivers for a lifetime. In this case, Anthony was lucky to live through his near drowning, but he would struggle with debilitating asthma and other health problems throughout his life. The family eventually moved on from the incident and away from Florida. But for Anthony, his struggles would follow, and he would eventually find himself right back in Florida, where his life started and, tragically, where it would end. But in the beginning, he was just a kid surrounded by a family who loved him very much.
July of 1998, we moved to Atlanta when Anthony was 7 or 8 years old. He was real funny. He was into his little Power Rangers, little cars and all that type of stuff. And then I put him in karate. That was exciting because, I mean, he thought he could just do karate on everybody. And I had to tell him one day, you cannot do that because you got some kids that like the street fight. So that karate stuff is out the window. He came in there crying with a little black eye and all that stuff. And I said, well, what did you do? We were just doing karate and he just punched me. I said, okay, you can't do that. Your karate lessons is for self-defense only, not playing.
Anthony's childhood seemed pretty standard. He was living in Atlanta with his mom and 3 sisters, and as a young boy, things seemed uncomplicated for him. But as children tend to do, he was growing up, and as the preteen years kicked in, so did Anthony's curiosity in the world around him and his desire for pushing boundaries.
Let's see, when he hit about 12, that was the interesting part, that preteen phase. I did have one incident where Anthony had went to the skating rink. And at the skating rink, he had fun and was doing his little thing or whatever, however. So I just, you know, left the skating rink. I say, okay, he in good hands up here. They supervise real good at the skating rink. And I went on back home. Next thing I know, police come to the door. I'm like, what's going on? My son was with these other guys and called themselves getting into it with one of the employees at the skating rink. So they pressed charges and all that stuff, and I had to get a lawyer, and like just doing things that he shouldn't have been doing and going places he shouldn't have been going, hanging out with older kids. So other than that, I really have not had any problems out of Anthony. Good kid, straight A student, so lovable and funny. When I say funny, will give you the shirt off his back. He'll have you laughing. Out of all 4 of my kids, my son was the only son. He was the only child that would come in, hug me every day and say, Mom, I love you. He was a good kid.
I'm sure Anthony was a good kid, or maybe he wasn't. Maybe his mom is the only person who saw his potential, as they often are. And thank God for that. Everyone should have someone who advocates for them and only sees their potential. But the facts are, Anthony was a black 13-year-old boy who was already in the system, being raised by a single mom who was desperately trying to navigate him away from the streets and towards a better life in spite of the gravitational pull of their surroundings. In fact, this was one reason LaTanya moved to Atlanta, Georgia. She wanted her children to have more opportunity than she had growing up in the small, rural town of Palatka, Florida.
Palatka is a small town, 1 high school, 2 middle schools. I left here when I was 17 years old, and I always said I would never, ever bring my kids here because there's nothing for them to do. It was barely anything for us to do back then. So It's a little town. Everybody know everybody. Everybody know everybody business. It's like everybody knows everybody. It doesn't matter the color or the race. Pretty much everybody knows everybody because we all went to school together.
Palatka is a small town with a population that sits under 11,000. It's in Putnam County, and it's situated at the bend of the St. John's River in northern central Florida. Known for their blue crab, azalea, and blueberry festival, it sits equal distance to Jacksonville, Orlando, Gainesville, and Daytona, and it's about 30 minutes outside of St. Augustine, Florida. The area has beautiful farms, interesting architecture, and a tight-knit community where most people were born and raised and never left. Migrant workers made a living off the potato and cabbage crops, and getting your hands dirty is a way of life for many people who live here. And like every town, Palatka has its areas with their own identity. A set of railroad tracks separates this Mayberry-esque vibe from what is referred to as the countryside of Palatka. I could give you a proper description, or I could simply tell you this was the predominantly Black section of Palatka. Charming itself and rich with history, but this is the imaginary line that transitions locals from one image of their town to another. And this is where LaTonya Passmore was raised.
It's like a lot of little towns. You know, you can drive maybe 5-10 minutes and be in the next little town. And it's a lot of woods, a lot of rural areas around here.
LaTonya tells us that this upbringing was never something Anthony embraced. He was a city boy, and returning to the country was never something that overjoyed him. So when LaTonya told him they were going to Palatka for a week to celebrate his grandmother's birthday, you can imagine his reaction.
I made him come, and he was just so upset with me. We stayed a week here. That was the plan, to stay a week for my grandmother's birthday. He brought one outfit, saying, go pack you some clothes, because, you know, we're going to stay a week, get your week worth of clothes. He brought one outfit. And I was like, okay, well, you're going to wear that outfit all week because I'm not going to the store to spend money on clothes that you already have. But anyway, one of my cousins from California came down as well. And he took him. They went, I don't know how he got my son in this club. I thought they were at his house. He got my son in this little club that has to be 18 and up to get in. And when he did that, for some reason, my son was like, mama, I say, what's up? He was like, can I go to Palatka for the summer?
This makes perfect sense. A young teenage boy goes to visit his grandmother and envisions a week of dial-up internet and bowls of peppermint candy. And instead, he hooks up with an older cousin and gets escorted into the club and introduced to a whole new world he never knew existed. I'm sure the thrill of being in the party atmosphere and feeling acceptance from an older cousin was a rush for 13-year-old Anthony. Of course, he would want more of that.
I was like, what? Really? You want to go to Palatka? I say, oh, okay, we'll see. Because I don't let my kids go anywhere without me being in that town or wherever they at. He was like, please. And I was like, we'll see, Aunt. I say, we'll see. It depends on your grades. And that's going to be that.
Every parent uses the good grades carrot to dangle in front of their kids to motivate them and stall on commitments we're not quite ready to make. But LaTonya wasn't the only hurdle Anthony needed to overcome before he could realize his summer of freedom plans.
To back it up a little bit, he was on probation and I told him that will be up to your probation officer as well, not just your grades. And I mentioned it to his probation officer, and he said, well, we'll see, because his probation officer had, like, a whole different look on my son because he had the braids and blend in with all the bad-looking kids or whatever. And he was like, you know, I'm just going to say I'm not going to judge a book by its cover. And I said, yeah, because he's not that type of kid, just because he looked like, you know, the braids and the baggy pants or whatever. This is a 14-year-old kid that still sleeps in my bed with me.
So leading into the summer of 2005, Anthony had now turned 14. Summer break was around the corner, and Anthony did not change his mind about spending the summer in Palatka. In fact, Anthony was determined to go, so much so that when his probation officer went to the school to check on his progress to determine if Anthony could go for the summer, he was shocked.
Now he said, your son did awesome. His grades. He said, when I went to the school, I couldn't believe that this was your kid making these type of grades. At the end of the day, he let him go.
July 2005, LaTanya was the only person standing in the way of Anthony's summer plans, and she had held out for as long as she could.
So I ended up letting him go, but by the time that he went, he only had, I want to say, 4 weeks before school started. So I'm thinking, okay, 4 weeks is fine. My sister had called me also and said, well, when Anthony comes, her husband had a car wash, and he asked, both of them asked, could he work for the summer and make him some money and work for my brother-in-law car wash? And I was like, oh, that's fine. That's cool. Because, you know, I already know how the people are in Palatka, like the drug dealers and the, you know, when your kid's not around, they're easily, when you're not around your kids, they're easily influenced by certain things. And that's one of the reasons I also didn't want him here either, because I didn't want him getting in no trouble meeting anybody and all that type of stuff. But I also said, okay, my mom is there. My oldest two girls are here in Palatka. So I have cousins. So, okay, he got a lot of people that's going to be looking out for him and stuff. 4 weeks is fine. My mom came down. We traded kids. I got three of my sister kids for the summer. And they took my son back with them. And I always say it to my kids, don't ever tell me bye. Tell me I'll see you later. I never liked it, bye. And for some reason, as he was leaving out, he was like, bye, Mom, I love you. I was like, don't say that. Don't say bye to me. And that was the last time I saw my son.
Hindsight is 20/20, and moms often tell us they just felt something was wrong and wish they would have paid more attention to their intuition. But speaking as a mom, you can't make every decision for your children based on fear. At some point, we all make decisions that we aren't sure we should have made. But most of us don't have to see our worst fears play out in real life. And LaTanya let her son go to the place she grew up to spend time with family. What's the worst that could happen? Right?
And I always talk to him every day. I made sure I talked to him every day. What you doing? How did work go? Did you get paid? Things like that.
LaTanya had always been Anthony's anchor. She was hoping he would have a good experience living with and working for family. Maybe he would find a good role model and gain some independence. He was, after all, working for her sister's husband, Shelton, who owned a local car wash. But unfortunately, things in Palatka were starting to fall apart, and Uncle Shelton, well, he was a little shady, according to LaTanya. And sadly, all the safeguards that she had put in place seemed to be crumbling.
I found out that my brother-in-law was not paying him. He would pay him when he felt like it and pay everybody else. So him and my son got into it, and it was a whole lot. And then I got the phone call from one of my daughters, because I have the twins, one work day and one work night. So he would stay with one in the daytime, and he would stay with one in the nighttime. And during the daytime, when she would take him to work, he got into it with my brother-in-law because they wasn't paying him and things. And then my daughter was like, called me one day and was like, Mom, you need to talk to him, because he's talking to strangers. And I already had told him when he got there, I don't want him talking to nobody. You're only to be with your family, and that's it. And she was like, he's talking to strangers, and he just need to go home. He just need to go home, because I don't want to be responsible for him. I don't know these people he's talking to, and I don't feel like arguing with him. I said, okay. So I told him that day, I said, well, it's time for you to come home. You have a week before school starts, and you need to get your school shopping out the way and all of that. And I've already told you about talking to strangers. I don't like that. I hear him in the background. Oh, you just a snitch. Why you always calling mama telling on me?
Anthony had been in Palatka for only a few weeks, but as you can hear, things were not going as everyone had hoped. His job at the car wash was causing friction with his uncle and his sisters. They were not happy with his new adult acquaintances that he had met there and was seen talking with. None of this was sitting right with LaTanya, so the decision was made to have Anthony take the bus home back to Atlanta the next day. For his last night in Palatka, his sister took him to get a video game and to McDonald's for dinner, and then a quick stop by the liquor store for her. When she exited the liquor store, she saw that Anthony had gotten out of the car and was talking with an adult male that she was not familiar with. Once again, his sister did not like what she was seeing, and she reported that back to LaTanya on the phone later that evening.
He called me after his sister because they was out getting games for the PlayStation game and getting him something to eat at that time. She told me she saw him talking to this guy that she didn't know. So they got home. When they got home, he called me, and I told him, I said, well, I tell you what, you're fixing to get on the bus. I say, do not go anywhere. Don't do anything. And when your grandmother call you, make sure you're in place so you can be taken to the bus station to get on back to Georgia so you can get ready for school. And he said, okay. When we got talking about him talking to strangers, the first thing came out of his mouth, oh, mom, that's not a stranger. I know him. His name is Mike. He got a girlfriend. Sometimes he and his girlfriend get into it. He'll ask me to drive him around. And I was like, okay, where did you meet Mike at? I met Mike at the car wash through Uncle Shelton.
Okay, never mind that Anthony was 14 and driving, but what grown man has a 14-year-old kid chauffeuring him around town and involving him in his relationship drama? LaTanya knew it was time to get Anthony away from Palatka and back to Atlanta.
I said, oh, okay, whatever, you're going to come home anyway.
July 29th, 2005. That morning, LaTanya calls her daughter to make arrangements to get Anthony back to Atlanta. She was anxious to get him home and back into the swing of their normal life in preparation for his new school year. But that call to her daughter would change everything.
So the next day that I called, I said, I'm fixing to Western Union you the money so you can give him the money to get on the bus. And she said, my daughter. She said, hold on, mama. Don't Western Union the money. I didn't come home last night. And I'm saying, like, what you mean? What do you mean he didn't come home last night? So in the back of my head, okay, he at my mom's house. He at my cousin's house. He with the other twin. Wasn't a biggie to me. So then I started calling around, looking for him everywhere. Nobody seen him. Not even my sister and my brother-in-law that he worked for. No one saw him. And I'm like, that is not like my kid. Like, where could he be? And then he's not answering his cell phone. And I already had to get on him many a times, even before he got to Florida, about him keeping his phone charged because his phone is always dead. I looked all day, waited and waited and waited, looking everywhere. Had my family looking everywhere. And I'm like, this is just not like my son. So by the time night came, nobody still hadn't seen my son. And I'm like, okay, his phone is still dead. That is just not like him. So by that time, we ended up calling the police and trying to do a missing persons report. They say they see this type of stuff all the time. Don't rush him coming down from Georgia. We'll find him. He'll be back. I said, okay. I got in my car and gassed it up and came on anyway because I wasn't waiting. And by the time I got here, it was the next day. Nobody still hadn't seen or heard from my son. And that's not like my son. His phone is still dead. So to move it forward, they came out and we did the missing persons report. The detective came out and pretty much said, oh, we see these type of cases again all the time. He's probably just a runaway. He'll be back. Don't worry.
LaTanya was more than worried. She was terrified. Her only son was missing, and she felt nobody knew him better than she did, and he was not the type to run away, like the police suggested. But to be fair, statistically speaking, the police have every reason to feel that Anthony left voluntarily and would more than likely return unharmed once he realized his mistake. 99% of children reported missing return home within a couple of days. I'm not at all suggesting that they treat any case as less of a priority or with less vigor, but it's important to know why a police officer would try to comfort a parent with that information. But LaTanya was not comforted at all.
I ain't going for that. I say because if my son wanted to run away, which he would never run away, he had all the state of Georgia to run away in, where I definitely wouldn't have been able to find him. So why would he run away? He's not going to run away. He would never do that. Not a kid that's still sleeping in my bed that call me every day. No. So that was pretty much how it started. It was hard, and I put flyers out. I went everywhere I could possibly go. I put them in all the stores. I did everything that I could possibly do. And I was out in my car riding every day, every night, all day pretty much, looking for my kids, ready to take him in any condition he's in.
LaTanya was not alone in her search.
And the police questioned everybody, and it's like nothing. It's like absolutely nothing.
Putnam County law enforcement was on the lookout for a 14-year-old black male who was reported missing and had informed neighboring counties of the boy's disappearance and his description. One of those neighboring counties is St. Johns County. Now, you may be more familiar with St. Johns County, Incorporated City of St. Augustine, Florida, which is known for its old-world charm and historical landmarks. St. Augustine is the oldest city in the U.S. and a bustling town overflowing with tourists who are there to soak up history, hauntings, and cocktails that celebrate the city's past life. It's a far cry from its unincorporated areas that are much more rural, like Deep Creek, a 12-mile swamp that feeds off the St. Johns River and meanders its way past thousands of acres of woods and flatlands, under bridges, and past farmland. It's not a well-traveled area, but on this day, it would get lots of attention for a case that seemed to be entirely unrelated to Anthony's disappearance.
My name is Gene Tolbert. I'm a sergeant with the Sheriff's Office in St. Johns County, Florida. Assigned to the cold case investigation of Anthony Lamar Peterson. This case occurred in the more rural area of St. Johns County. There's a lot of farms and country roads and things like that. So it's not uncommon to see tractors or farm equipment going down the road. So Monday, August 1st, 2005, one of the local farmers is moving a tractor from one piece of a property to another. And he is on a county road moving this tractor. And because he's in a tractor, it's sitting a little higher than most typical vehicles sit. And he happens to glance over as he crosses over Deep Creek. And he sees what he believes to be a body in the water. And he contacts the sheriff's office. So the sheriff's office dispatches deputies to the area. They dispatch a dive team. They dispatch detectives. And they find what they believe to be, at the time, to be the decomposing body of a white male. They pull that body out of the water. The body is in relatively poor condition. A lot of the degradation to the remains are the result of just being in swampy conditions. Florida can be very unforgiving with its weather. This is August, the hottest part of the year. And then also you've got animal activity. Body was in water for an extended period of time, it appeared, for at least a couple of days. You've got aquatic life activity on the body as well. There's gators in the area, there's turtles, and to them, this is just simply a source of food. So all those elements took a toll on this body and really kind of frustrated the initial investigation into this case. I've seen both video from the original scene and photos from the original scene, although I was not at the original scene. And based on what I've seen, you can tell that the remains are of a male, and you can tell they're human. You can definitely see the clothing and the shape and the makings of a human body. But as far as identification, the majority of the face was missing. There had been a great deal of animal activity and degradation to the head. And that's typically one of the main identifying features to a person. So we were checking missing persons reports for the surrounding counties, looking for a missing white male. And we were not finding something that fit what we had, that we were kind of coming up empty.
Meanwhile, across the county line, LaTanya hears of a body that was found in Deep Creek. Gathering her courage, she calls to ask a question no parent should ever have to ask. She asks if the dead body found in Deep Creek was her son, Anthony.
For some reason, every day they finding bodies here, finding bodies there, finding these. And I'm calling almost every day, every week, at least about two bodies. I don't know what was going on during that time here, but I would call, and every time I would call, oh no, that's not my son. Oh no, that's not my son. That's not my son. That's not my son.
LaTanya did indeed call the police department, and she was in fact told that the body at Deep Creek was not Anthony. It couldn't be. The body found at Deep Creek was in a progressive state of decomp due to being submerged in the water. However, there were certain obvious markers on the body that could be recorded. They were confident it was a white male. Unfortunately, the facial features were severely compromised due to animal activity. When a body is left submerged in water, and specifically in Florida swamp water, the soft tissue is often the first thing consumed by smaller water animals such as turtles and fish. And in this case, there was absolutely zero soft tissue left on the face to help identify the body found in Deep Creek. Sergeant Tolbert tells us more.
And the biggest misleading factor in this case, as far as slowing the investigation down, was the fact that the remains appeared white. Visually looking at the remains from the photos and the video that I've personally seen, they look white. And then additionally, the pathologist, when he did the autopsy, initially said the remains were those of a white male.
We asked Sergeant Tolbert to walk us through the protocol and process that takes place when an unidentified body is found.
So typically when a body is brought into the ME's office, the doctor will do an examination to see if there's any obvious signs of death. Mechanical injury, gunshot wounds, obvious stab injuries, obvious ligature marks, blunt force trauma, anything that could possibly point to a cause of death. And in this case, we didn't find any of that. So from there, they'll actually do a dissection of the remains and try to look for internal injuries that might give you some kind of clue. Also look for some type of medical issue that might explain the death, natural disease or anything along those lines. Nothing along those lines were found in this case either. So there was no obvious external reason for the death, and there was no obvious internal reason for the death. So that process there takes several hours. Once that process has been completed, they'll take tissue samples and samples of fluids as far as blood or urine or other fluids, sometimes vitreous fluid from the eyes and different things like that. And they'll send those off to a laboratory for toxicology testing to see if there's any foreign substances. Is there anything that explains the death there that, might give us a clue as far as what happened? Although the initial physical exam usually takes, somewhere probably between 2 and 4 hours, we might not have a full picture as far as the autopsy goes for 60 to 90 days down the road once we get all these lab reports back.
At this point, the unidentified body was going through the standard process for identifying the remains. During the autopsy, one finding stood out, a palate expander. This is an oral device placed in the roof of the mouth to widen the upper jaw. It's a common orthodontic device, but it's mostly used in patients whose jaw and facial development can still be manipulated. In other words, juveniles. Now, this information was puzzling, but nobody was aware at the time that this device could provide answers, so the body continued through the long process of identification through exams and lab work.
And as for LaTanya, after the assurance from the police that the body found was not, could not be her son Anthony, she was both relieved and frustrated. Where was Anthony? And how does a 14-year-old disappear from a small town like Palatka and nobody sees a thing? Law enforcement followed up on leads and questioned those around and closest to Anthony at the time of his disappearance. They quickly grew frustrated with the lack of cooperation and information coming their way from anyone other than LaTanya. Hoping that if people wouldn't talk to the police, they would talk to her, LaTanya continued her own investigation. But the information she discovered only added to her worry and frustration.
So after my son went missing, this one guy said, Miss Tonya, your son got into that black car. And he named the person name. And all I could think about was, you know, when you think about stuff like that, when your kids start talking to you and telling you stuff, and when I say he was talking to strangers and he was like, oh, Mom, that's just a friend. I met him through the car wash and his name was Mike and I drive his car sometimes when his girlfriend get mad. And remember I said that? Okay. This guy said, your son left in a black Maxima. You know, I thank God right now that if it wasn't for this guy, we wouldn't know anything. And I said to myself, black Maxima, okay. That's the guy Mikey was telling me about when I was asking him about talking to strangers. That's Mike. He told me Mike drive a Maxima. And that's the only thing that I could think about. Mike drive a Maxima. Well, come to find out, Mike is the one that picked him up. Mike claimed that he dropped my son off to my brother-in-law's house. My brother-in-law claimed, yes, he was dropped off here, but he left walking. Then you have witnesses saying he walked back to my house. So the police just got involved and they questioned my brother-in-law and they questioned this guy, Mike. By that time, I was already putting out flyers, going different places and all this type of stuff. And it was just hard for me because by you having a kid that's not from this town, no one knows him. Other than, oh, that's the kid from the car wash. Nope, no one knew him. And he blended in with all the little colored boys with the dreads and the afros and the braids and stuff. So nobody knew my son.
In late October, the autopsy report landed on the desk of the lead detective at St. Johns County Police Department. Noticing the surprising finding of an expander and the series of numbers stamped on it, he began inquiring with local dentist as to the significance of the numbers and the information it could provide. Sergeant Tolbert tells us what happened from there.
And based on the manufacturer markings on the particular dental item, we were able to track down the manufacturer. There was a relatively small list of clients who had received this particular model in the time that that particular model had been manufactured. There were some markings on it as far as the manufacture date. So it really narrowed down a very large pool to a very small pool of potential persons under 100. And those are pretty good odds when you're trying to identify a body. And then from there, just the conversation one of the detectives had at the time with the manufacturer actually knew that one of their patients had been reported missing, was a juvenile, and had been reported missing in Putnam County, Florida. And when the detective found that information out, he was able to get that information from our neighboring agency. Putnam County abuts St. Johns County, very near where this scene is. And that's ultimately how Anthony was identified, was because of that pallet expander.
The findings left everyone who worked on the case stunned.
You're looking at this and you're saying, oh, this is a white guy. And then you're all this information you're developing is saying, no, this is a black child. I work with some of the folks who were original detectives on this case, and they said their minds were blown.
And while the police were grappling with their discovery, LaTanya was at home contemplating her next move, already emotionally and physically exhausted from the trauma of her son being missing. She had no idea what to do with the jolt of adrenaline surging through her body and brain when she saw police cars driving towards her home.
Remember I said, I have called about so many bodies, and everybody was like 100% not my kid. I wasn't a big internet person and all that type of stuff, so anything they put on the internet or whatever, I didn't see it because I wasn't on the internet. I was out in my car riding every day, every night, all day pretty much looking for my kids, ready to take him in any condition he's in. Because by this time, months had started to pass. He went missing the end of July. Here, August, no amp. September, no amp. You know, by the time October came, 4 months later, I see all these police coming down the street. I was like, oh, okay. What they done found out? They come in and was like, Ms. Passmore? I was like, yes. We have some good news. I'm like, okay, what's the good news? We found your son. We found him. Now, they said it just like I'm saying it. We found him. I'm like, oh, my God. Hallelujah. Thank you. I said, I'm ready to take him in any condition he in right now. They said, well, remember the body you called us about back in August? And here it is, October 23rd. And you asking me to remember a body that I called you back in way back August, in August? And they said, yeah. They say, well, the one that you called us about that was found off of Cracker Swamp Road in the creek turned out to be your son, Anthony. I was like, no. Y'all told me 100% not my kid. Y'all told me it was a Caucasian male. And then by the time I seen all y'all flyers and stuff on his body that was found, it says Caucasian male, 100% not my kid, all of that. So how did y'all find out this was my kid? And then they just escalated on from there. Just escalated from there, all downhill.
The torment of having a missing child often leaves parents in emotional purgatory, a constant state of dread, worry, guilt, and helplessness. But there's also a small glimmer of hope that one day soon, that child will walk through the door, in whatever state, in whatever condition, but they will be home. For parents like LaTanya, the suffering of not knowing where they are is over, but the real torment has only just begun. Anthony's body was found 2 days after he went missing over 4 months earlier. And to be told it wasn't, it couldn't be your child, and then to be told it was her son all along, well, understandably, LaTanya was in a state of denial.
I don't understand how, and I probably would never understand how the water would turn him completely snow white. They told me he was snow white with no hair, bald head. How, by him being fully dressed, did he not have any dark spots on him? Because he was chocolate. He was chocolate. And he wasn't brown skin, light skin. He was chocolate. And I just do not understand how every part of his body was snow white. That's why they said that was 100% not my kid. But it turned out that it was my son. I still didn't believe it because they didn't show me no pictures. I didn't see pictures. I seen nobody. As of today, right now, today, I've never seen my son. So I don't really know if it's him other than taking their word. They kept telling me, Ms. Passmore, just remember him the way he was. You don't want to see these pictures. And I'm like, okay. So one officer said the only thing that he noticed different was he had shoestring in his belt loop. For a belt, like, you know how our kids put the shoestrings in their belt loops and tied? That got me right there because he always did that. I always used to get onto him, where's your belt? And he'll have shoestrings in his belt loop. So I said, okay, let me go through his clothes at this house to see if, because I wouldn't help him pack. So I know what he brought to Florida with him. And I can account for all his belts. He didn't have a belt on. So when they said a shoestring, and then again, I was like, okay, it might be other people do that too. So pretty much that's it.
Anthony Peterson is no longer listed as a missing person, and the body discovered in Deep Creek is no longer unidentified. But how Anthony Peterson died and ended up in Deep Creek was still a mystery. Over the 4 months that Anthony was missing, the St. John's police put together a timeline of Anthony's last movements, hoping to discover where he was and who he was with.
One of the very first things you want to do in really any investigation is try to establish some type of timeline as far as where this person was, what they were doing, who they were with, I mean, you kind of fill in as many gaps as you possibly can, and oftentimes the picture will paint itself based on that timeline. And they were able to find out from Anthony's sister that on that Friday night, they had gone to McDonald's, and she had purchased a cheeseburger meal for him. And the reason why that was important is because with the cheeseburger meal, he also got french fries. So if you kind of go back into the past at autopsy, the stomach contents were a meat and potato-like content. So that small piece of information helps immensely as far as time of death goes, because a doctor could reasonably tell you how long it would take your body to process, you know, a cheeseburger meal from McDonald's with a reasonable degree of certainty. And to know that he still had a meat and potato substance in his stomach suggests that he likely died within hours of that meal.
Now their job was to review the timeline to discover who may know why and how Anthony was dead and his body ended up in the Deep Creek River. What they would soon discover is LaTanya didn't need to worry about strangers around her son. The danger, or so it seemed, was much closer to home.
That Friday night, they had gone to a drive-thru liquor store over in Palatka called Dean's Still. And Anthony had gotten out of his sister's car and went over and talked to an individual that his sister didn't know. And it was enough that it concerned her that when Anthony came back to the vehicle, she questioned Anthony as far as who the man was that he had been talking to. And he told her that it was Mike Campbell, and it was someone that he knew from Uncle Sheldon's car wash. So based on that information, the assumption is that and knowing Mike Campbell's history as far as contact with law enforcement, we know he's at minimum a drug user. Knowing that Sheldon was not only washing cars, but also selling narcotics, the assumption is the conversation with Anthony has something to do with drugs.
Whether or not that winds up being important in the case in the grand scheme of things, we don't know. When they talked to Mike, he did acknowledge that he knew where Deep Creek was, that he had been over there to go fishing before, but denied having Anthony in his car the night that he disappeared and denied knowing what happened to Anthony. But Mike was added to the list of people that were very important to be interviewed.
Also on that list was Anthony's Uncle Sheldon.
Same scenario with Sheldon. Sheldon said, yeah, Anthony came over to my house that night. His sister believed Anthony's in bed asleep. Anthony has snuck out, gone over to Sheldon's house. And that's why I said before that we believe Sheldon might have been one of the last people to see Anthony alive. So it definitely leaves Sheldon on the table. We've talked to Sheldon a number of times over the years. I went back and I tried to re-interview Sheldon just to see if he would say anything different. He was very standoffish. He had actually been arrested up in Jacksonville for selling cocaine. And so I went and pulled him out and interviewed him up at the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office. He didn't give any additional information, basically said he didn't have any information about what happened to Anthony. So unfortunately, the right person either hasn't been talked to yet or hasn't had the right, you know, heartstring pulled yet.
Understandably, LaTanya Passmore feels both Mike and Shelton are holding back on information about Anthony and what happened to him on that Friday night back in 2005.
We already know who the suspects were because of some of the words on the street. Now, that was the hardest part for our family, my sister Hood. They, since Mike was the last one to see him, and Mike claimed he dropped him off at Sheldon's house, my family and I just started just digging ourselves, just on them. By the time we gave the information to the police, my brother-in-law had done changed his story 1,000 times. He was all over the place, but my brother-in-law was also schizo and bipolar. He had to take medicine to stay in his right mind, plus he was on drugs bad. Come to find out, Mike was also on drugs. Mike was a crackhead. My brother-in-law and my sister left a week after my son went missing. The other guy, Mike, also left and went back to Miami. Now, during the time that I was looking for my son and passing out flyers, remember I told you the little town surrounding us, probably about 20 minutes away, Hastings, Florida. So as we got ready to leave, this one guy come running down the road, and he came and said, I heard that your son did something to Mike, took some music out his car, and he was going to get that jet. I'm going to get that jet. I'm going to get that jet. I was like, okay. So I told the police, gave the police the information. Mike also called himself confessing to someone in jail. He pretty much said that, yes, they picked my son up. They took my son out to this Camp Creek in Hastings, which I saw, and said that my brother-in-law came up behind my son and grabbed my son by his neck. Said my son fell to the ground holding his chest like he was having a heart attack. And he said he looked down and noticed that my son wasn't breathing. He said he told my brother-in-law, we got to get this boy to the hospital. He ain't breathing. He's not breathing. And said that my brother-in-law said, I ain't going down for murder. I ain't going down for none of this. And they took him and threw him in the creek. Now, this is what Mike said to someone that was in jail.
Can you imagine your 14-year-old son being fished out of the swampy creek water in a small rural town in Florida where you send him to enjoy his summer vacation, and then wrestling with the rumors and whispers that someone in your own family knows exactly what happened to him and in the very least refuses to be transparent with law enforcement, and in the very worst, considering that he may actually have something to do with his death? Sergeant Tolbert tells us this is a constant source of friction in cases where drugs are involved. People are often afraid they'll get arrested on a drug charge, so they steer clear of any involvement with the police, even when it involves the death of a child. But for a parent who desperately wants to know what happened to their son, this is torture.
You know, I'm a dad. I have children. I have two girls. While I've never been in that situation before as far as losing a child, I've talked to my share of families in my career, and it's heartbreaking, you know. It tears at your being, you know, as far as being able to actually work the case. But when you start talking to loved ones and they start talking about, you know, their family member in life and who they were and who they'll never get a chance to be, It makes it a little bit harder to pretend that that's just a piece of evidence. And you really start focusing more on the emotional side of things. And, you know, I can tell you, every time Ms. Passmore has called me, I pulled Anthony's book out and have flipped through it. And I'm like, okay, what am I missing? You know, and she called me again, what am I missing? And you just kind of go through it and you see if there's anything new, any new spark of information. You know, the tips in this case are few and far between. I know Ms. Passmore hasn't forgotten about her son, but I'm fearful that the community has. So, you know, things like this podcast that you're doing is very helpful to keep Anthony's memory alive and keep it in people's heart and mind and mouth and have them talk about it. And maybe the right person comes forward with the right piece of information and we close the case.
If anybody knows anything, they need to come forward and say something. Something to help me solve this case. This has been a burden on me. I had went through 12 years of depression. I'm just now coming out, maybe 2 years ago. And it will lift a lot off of me to know what happened to my kid. If it was an accident, it was an accident. You know, somebody knows something.
We tell Anthony's story and other stories of victims in dealing justice in hopes that one person who knows information will be led to help reveal the truth so the family can have justice and peace. It's hard to listen to a mom's heartbreaking story of losing her son, and also as we realize that she questions why something's happened, and we found this comforting poem. It's called Why. Why? That's what we ask. The truth is, we may never be able to know for sure why, but we do know that there is no single should have done or could have done or did or didn't do that would have changed that why. All that love could do was done.
Anthony Lamar Peterson was just 14 years old. He struggled to find himself, and when he needed protection and guidance from the adult men in his life, he was used and preyed upon. Anthony deserved better. His mom deserves better. It's been 19 years since his death, and while answers will not bring him back, it will be a step towards healing, and Anthony can finally rest in peace.
If someone has information regarding Anthony's case, or any case for that matter, I would love for them to be able to contact law enforcement and share their information with law enforcement and be willing to share their details about what they know. But if for whatever reason they don't feel like that they can do that, they can reach out through Crime Stoppers. The Crime Stoppers phone number for St. John's County is 1-888-277-8477. And they can also submit tips online at northeastflorida.crimestoppersweb.com and click on the submit a tip button. And then there's also a Crime Stoppers app that you can download on your phone. It's called PC3, and you can submit tips through there as well.
Okay, guys, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for being patient with us. We are just so excited to have season 3 out here. And again, thank you for listening and being amazing followers and helpful to these cases. Lori and I, in talking to LaTanya and Sergeant Tolbert, really learned a lot about Anthony and his life in his short 14 years. So we're going to go through some of the suspects and things that we learned and kind of walk you guys through our thought process. But this is just our discussion and what goes through our mind. And so we're inviting you guys into that with us. So let's start with the fact that I hate that Anthony was here and hoped for this to be a change for him, that his mom did, and he ends up coming here and being around family, and especially Shelton, who, again, that's his mom's sister, her husband. Now, let's just point out, too, obviously, there's LaTanya. That's a lot to take in, the fact that your family was there and really won't provide too many answers.
Right. And especially if, like, we don't know, was it a murder? Was it a crime? Or was it simply something that they got a little too deep in? And like she said, you know, with his illness and his sickness, you know, was it something that they just can't come clean because they're afraid they're going to get into trouble? And that's, I think, what's really tearing her apart in different ways. You know, one minute she could think he was killed and who did it, or, hey, was it this tragic accident that something could have been done differently, but it wasn't a crime.
Right. Well, but let's start with Shelton and the very fact that, okay, so, you know, one thing that we don't want to harp on, and I don't know how important it is in terms of, I don't want to get sidetracked for Anthony's sake on the fact that there was drug activity going on in the car wash in Shelton. And I think a lot of the people that hung out at that car wash, there was drug activity. Now, Anthony, there was never any proof, or nor does anyone know that he had anything to do with that side of things. But I think just from the context clues that he was getting drug into a lifestyle that they were using him, if for anything else. And I think that's kind of what the question was. Were they using Anthony to run marijuana, you know, here or there? And just basically, again, using his just being not worldly, being naive, and using him to further their drug sales. So that's where Shelton comes involved. And the very fact, too, that he just wasn't forthcoming, and even nor to LaTanya. But if it's my nephew And even though I'm doing something wrong, if I can offer some help, I mean, wouldn't you do that?
Yeah, especially when there is such heartache and trauma and everything going in, just to be able to heal somebody from knowing at least what happened or try to help.
Yeah, especially if it's just drug related. And that's where I think I still feel that that's not enough. I feel like that's what makes me think there's something more there because, and again, Jean Tolbert had reassured us that they told everyone involved in this time and time again, that there would be no blowback from anything. They were not interested in anything drug related at all. And in fact, they really weren't interested in anything other than information about Anthony. And so, you know, basically telling them, don't worry about getting in trouble with drugs or anything else other than just tell us what happened to Anthony.
Right, exactly. And that's all they wanted to know was answers with that. And another thing, because we did spend so much time up there and he showed us things. I mean, I don't know about you, but when we saw the scene of where his body was found, what a miracle that his body was even found, because it sat up on a road so high and that a guy happened to be driving by in a tractor so high that he could actually see it. If that tractor didn't drive by, they probably would have, I don't know how long it would have been till they found his body.
Right. Because again, and we'll post some of these pictures on the website and on Facebook and all of our social media, so you guys can see also. But it was really this swampy area, and there's just all kinds of water plants and things, that branches and trees that a body could get caught up on. And again, like you said, just the fact that this farmer actually happened to be looking over and saw that, and only because of his vantage point of sitting up high did he even see that. So at least there's that closure, and it wasn't where is he at, which is its own kind of pain for a lot of parents. But then let's talk about Mike Campbell. There is something, I hope that Mike Campbell comes forward. I hope that somebody gets a message to him, because there was the rumor that LaTanya had told us about, that she had heard that Mike had been telling people he could not live with some of the things that he had did, and that he was mentally struggling. And then there are rumors that he actually confessed to being there when Anthony was harmed. So I think, yeah, that's got to be really tough. And the fact too that she heard from the get that Mike Campbell had involvement. His name and Shelton's came up from the very, very beginning.
And Mike Campbell, correctly, is not related to them. He's just the friend of Shelton.
He was somebody who hung out at the car wash. He's also been known to deal drugs. And I think that what came out of that whole area, you guys, if we didn't paint the picture for you before, is that the police really did not get much traction in terms of from the community to really in that circle. I don't want to say the community, in that circle, they did not get a lot of traction. There's just a lot of drug use, a lot of drug arrests and things like that. And so they really did not get a lot of cooperation. I think such a frustrating point for LaTanya, because people would tell her things, but she would say, you have to go tell that to police. And they would basically like, no, thank you. You're on your own. So LaTanya really basically had to carry that. And now it's a third party. And so it's all rumors. But, you know, Sergeant Tolbert had went there, pulled Shelton out. They had attempted to get him to confess. They really did. And in talking with them, we can't cover all the points, but I can say I truly feel like they covered all their bases. They did everything they could possibly do to get Mike and Shelton to at least talk to them.
Right. And then they just ran up to a wall, and it's not too late. It's not too late if somebody knows information. It's not too late for somebody to come forward. Again, you know, Sergeant Tolbert gave the Crime Stoppers number. I'll give it again. It is 1-888-277-8477. And most importantly, too, we just want LaTanya to know that, you know, her son is not forgotten. And we saw that with the police department, too, that they really do want answers and they want people to call in.
Right. But I also think that I was really surprised at their commitment level all these years later to Anthony, to LaTanya, and just really to get answers. And I think that Sergeant Tolbert was super encouraging with, if we have any information or all the information that he had, and just seeing how much work he still does on this case. That was that gave me hope. And I hope that everybody out there knows that, that, you know, our experience with this is that they are still working this case and they are still very committed for Anthony's sake to finding answers. And we just hope that they do. Thank you guys for listening. We're so glad that Anthony could be our episode one. We hope you guys will join us for episode two and all the episodes to follow.
Like us on Facebook at Cold Case Playing Cards for all the latest information on this case and other cards we'll be featuring on future episodes. Healing Justice is written, produced, and hosted by Jennifer Dubisak and myself, Lori Jennings. Our executive consultant is the Cold Case Playing Cards creator, retired FDLE Special Agent Tommy Ray. If you want to help us spread the word about these victims' stories, please subscribe and leave us a positive review on your favorite podcast app. And tell your friends to subscribe.
Thank you for listening and join us next time on Dealing Justice.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app.
Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.